Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now, Scan Radio Show, number 3012. Stop Child Abuse Now is a production of NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. NASCA is a nonprofit 501c3 self-supporting through our own contributions. And I'm going to read the mission statement of NASCA. We have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And you can learn more about NASCA on their wonderful website, which is naasca.org. And tonight our special guest will be Cherie White from Covington, Tennessee. She's an anti-bullying advocate and the author of three books, who uses her own story of being bullied and gaslighted to help those enduring the same abuse today. Quote, in sixth grade, I began a long lesson in the human predator-prey dynamic and a battle for my dignity, safety, and my very soul, unquote. At first, she took to physical beatings, name-calling, and abuse. Cherie was a victim of what is called polyvictimization. In just 6 months, she went from being a kid who always made the honor roll to an angry and bitter girl who made only C's and D's. Quote, who could concentrate on schoolwork, she asks. Cherie attempted suicide at the age of 14. Quote, because I felt powerless, I began to bully those who were even weaker than me in attempts to grab back some of my power. On these episodes, we welcome various co-hosts, survivor professionals who assist in fielding questions and lead a variety of topics suggested by our call-in participants. Their trauma-informed perspectives as survivor professionals will help them guide discussions on the issues of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from questions and topics brought to us by our listeners. Everyone's invited to engage on tonight's show. And you can join us simply by calling the phone number. And that phone number is 646-595-2118. And when you call in, Penelope will welcome you, and you can be on the show and participate and ask questions of our special guest. And with that, I will introduce Sheree White. Hi, Sheree.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, it's good to have you. And what are we going to talk about tonight?
I think we're going to talk about the definition of bullying and what bullying really means, because there's a lot of people today that that have a very vague, broad view of bullying, because bullying is a broad term. And I think that a lot of the reasons why targets don't stand up for themselves is because a lot of times they don't know when they're being bullied. And, you know, bullying is a pattern. But on the other hand, you have a lot of people who are just jerks. They're not necessarily bullies, but they're jerks. So I feel obligated to discuss the distinction between bullying and jerky behavior.
Okay, that sounds like a wonderful topic. And I want to know the difference, too. And I'll just let you go ahead and take it then, if you would. We don't have any caller in yet. And so,
Annie, I'm sorry. Annie, this is Penelope, and I'm sorry to interject. I'm tonight's co-host, and I just, before we get started, we always love to have people call in to be panelists and participate in the show, and an opportunity, Sheree, to ask you questions related to the topic of bullying. So it's my job to greet callers on the back line. So I would just like to tell anybody listening, if they want to participate, all they have to do is call in. And the number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118. And I greet you on the back line and then put you into the show and listen-only mode. So thank you. Sorry to interject. I just wanted to make sure that we got the number out there at the beginning of the show.
Thank you, Penelope. I appreciate that. All right. Please call in. And now, Sheree, we'll let you begin.
Okay. Again, I'd like to discuss the distinction between bullying and jerky behavior. Bullying has a target. Bullies always have a target. In other words, if it's for it to be bullying, well, let me discuss the jerk first. A person who is a jerk, they don't have any targets. You know, they're just a really mean to everybody. So there's no certain target. Bullying has a certain target. You know, it could be, you know, most of the time it's one person, but it can be one, two, or maybe even three. But a jerk, you know, like I said, he's a jerk to everybody. A bully, he's not a bully to everybody. A bully has a target, and it's usually one person that he habitually abuses. Number two, a jerk, you know, it may not be a habit. It may not be habitual. A jerk is not habitual against one person. A bully, on the other hand, it's so habitual it becomes a pattern. And they pattern of abuse against one person. So, and it goes on for a long period of time. mm-hmm. a jerky behavior. It's sporadic, and it's against different people. But a bully, he's got a target, and he bullies that target for a long period of time. And I just wanted to put that out there. A lot of people mistake stubbornness, heated debate. They mistake that for bullying, and it's not. You know, people are going to argue, but an argument doesn't equal bullying. An argument is just between two people who don't agree on the same thing. But bullying can stem from an argument. We have a lot of people today that if you don't agree with everything they agree on, then they start bullying you. Bullying can stem from arguments, but an argument does not mean bullying. It's two people that just don't agree on something. So I wanted to put that out there as well.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the difference. And, I know a lot of jerks. Unfortunately, I'm kidding. That was a joke.
Right.
Thank you for telling me the difference.
Oh, I'm very happy to do so. Another thing, a jerk is afraid that you're going to want something from him. A bully wants something from you, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's really in a nutshell way of explaining it. A jerk is afraid that you'll want something from him. A bully wants something from you.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. This is Penelope, if that's okay, because it's on this point.
Go ahead, Penelope. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So when you say that a bully wants something from you, would that be a victory? Would that be or an emotional response? Would that be a reaction of hurt or a reaction from the bully's intended victim, if you will, of some sort of confirmation that pain has been inflicted? Would that be something that they're looking for?
Can you repeat that again?
Sorry. So in terms of a bully having the intent to get something out of someone, would that something that you've mentioned be like a reaction of the recipient of the bully's conduct being hurt by it, or a concession of allowing the bully to win on a certain point, or even to show an emotion of pain? When you say the bully is intending to get something out of it, I'm just trying to understand.
Bully gets power out of it. And it's several things that the bully gets out of it. There's a psychological payoff. Number one, he enjoys in a nutshell, the bully gets a sense of power out of it. But he also, in that power, he gets a kick out of watching the target react. He knows he can make the target react, and that gives him a sense of power. Another thing is he knows he can inflict pain on another person. He can determine whether they have a good day or a bad day. And, you know, all that gives him a sense of power. So bullies, they bully people to get power and domination. Does that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely makes
sense. It does to me.
You know, I remember, yeah, it does make sense. And I remember learning about it, you know, in domestic violence that, you know, abuse is done also via intent. So there's that theme of intent. So, yes, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
See, bullying and abuse are one and the same, and they're all about power.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually done by people who are weak on the inside, but they bully to cover up their weaknesses, because most bullies are cowards. They're weak cowards. And the bullying is just to make them look dominant, make them look tough. So, and it's to make them feel important. There's a lot of reasons people bully. And that seems to be the main one.
Because they feel weak themselves, and so they're trying to exert power over someone else.
Right, so that they can feel powerful. But not only that, they do it also to cover their weaknesses. They don't want anyone else. They don't want to look vulnerable to anyone else. So, therefore, they find a target and they bully that target. So there's really a lot of psychological payoffs here. A lot of bullies bully others because they feel bad about themselves. And the only way they can feel good about themselves is to make someone else feel even lower than they do.
Yeah.
Bullies are really sad people. They're really just sad, pitiful, pathetic people. Another thing about bullies is they run in packs. You'll never see a bully alone. And without their entourage, they don't have any power. The bullies always have to have an entourage behind them. Because, I mean, even they know that there's strength in numbers.
Yeah.
And they use that against the target. And they use it to intimidate the target.
I'm thinking about the bullies in my life and how these things are true about them. The only thing so far that my mother, the bully, doesn't quite match is that she didn't run in packs. It was just her being a bully. However, she did turn the brothers and sisters against one another. So I suppose that's sort of like creating her own pack.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
They always have to have followers, people that basically do what they say. It's like, don't talk to her, don't associate with her. And then just having other people turn and not talk to the target, they're basically their followers.
Right. My sister told me the other day that there was a nickname that my father used to call me, and he made all the brothers and sisters call me that too, which I did not remember. And it was an offensive nickname. I was really surprised to hear it. And that would be an example of my father, the bully, getting others to join him by using the same mean name.
Oh, my goodness. I'm
yeah,
so sorry to hear that.
Bullies. Thank you. Yeah. Yep, raised by wolves, as they say.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand you.
Oh, I saw raised by wolves. You know how some people who were abused as children, they'll say they were raised by wolves. Although wolves do a better job of raising the children than some people do.
Right. Like, I'm just trying to get the phone. because it's real. I'm really having to strain my ears to hear. So just bear with me.
Oh, dear. Okay. I'll try to speak up a little.
It's not that you're your voice is too low. We're basically breaking up.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's sometimes it sounds staticky. But anyway,
I'm not hearing static.
We can hear you.
Yeah, I am on my. It's on my end. It's on my end because it was on my end last time. Because when I listened to the recording later, it was crystal clear, and I'm thinking, so I knew it was my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, moving on, we have, you know, different types of bullies. We have passive-aggressive bullies. And, you know, being bullied by someone who's passive-aggressive, it's both demeaning and it's humiliating. And I say this because when these types insult you, they're real slick about it. They'll catch you off guard. They'll taunt you in such a way that it can be tricky to figure out who it's aimed at. And sometimes you don't even know that it's directed at you until it's way too late for you to deliver a good comeback. Because passive-aggressive types of bullies may not necessarily address it to you, and while you may be unaware, any bystanders and witnesses nearby will immediately know who the covert nastiness was meant for. And it's funny how we tend to see so much clearer from the outside. Now, what's so terrible about this is that the insults are stealthy, and they're usually hurled at you in front of an audience, and it can quickly fly over your head and make you look weak or like a clueless idiot for not catching them in time. And even though the bully's words are vague and unclear, they will still nibble at your self-esteem and take a chunk out of your pride, whether you want them to or not, because you usually figure it out sooner or later. Therefore, it only goes to show that how vicious these covert attacks can be. And although the bully and a few others might think he's being cute or witty, just the fact that the bully won't just come out and say it, you know, they use innuendo and insinuations to insult you. And that in itself tells you a lot about them. Number one, that they're a big coward because they just won't come out and directly tell you. Because they don't have the guts to make a direct attack. Therefore, they don't dare come out and tell you directly what they think of you. They hope the insults go over your head because they know that if they can confuse you and throw you off balance, the least likely you are to jab back with a good counterattack and make them look like a punk. I mean, think about it. If these bullies weren't such sniveling cowards, they would not feel any need to mince words, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I like that, sniveling cowards. That's what they are.
Absolutely. And the reason why they do this is because it makes them look cute. They think it makes them look cute. Pardon me. Passive aggressiveness is also used to get attention and look intelligent in front of others. And the only way these bullies can achieve this is to stun you, to keep you, is to deliver such a mealy-mouthed insult to stun you and keep you silent. Now, many times the shock value of the insult is such that it often leaves the recipient and bystander speechless. You know, shock shuts down the ability to think clearly and causes the target to pause for a second or two. Many times, the target is left stunned, standing there with their mouth hung open and unable to, because of this, the poor person looks slow and feeble-minded in the eyes of bystanders, and it makes the bully look smart and witty. Also, it can strike fear into the target and keep them from speaking out because they're afraid that the bully will only verbally beat them down with more wisecracks. Remember, this bully is a coward. Therefore, they do not want you to be quick with a burning comeback. Here's another reason that that some bullies are passive-aggressive. There's easy deniability in it. If the insults are vague and indirect, there's a higher chance the bully will escape accountability. Should the target either catch it right off and either respond to it or report it. The bully can then more easily misconstrue the message and defensively claim, oh, that's not what I meant, or, oh, well, there was no harm intended, or even this, I wasn't referring to you, or you took it the wrong way. Understand that although the garbage that comes out of their mouth may be vile and directed at you, it'll often have several different interpretations, and because of these multiple meanings, the bully can very innocently explain away the put-down and make you look overly sensitive, paranoid, or mentally unstable. And this insulates the bully from any accountability or comebacks that may make them look foolish. Now, are you beginning to see the level of pathetic these people are?
Yes. I have a comment, and it's a sad comment that I have to make, but I can see myself in the passive-aggressive stuff. I'm afraid that I'm guilty of having done that, passive-aggressive bullying. I have, and I'm so sad to have it pointed out to me that I have. I wasn't aware of it, that that's what I was doing.
Right. Oh, I'm guilty of it, too. I was a very passive-aggressive person when I was young. So I completely understand. I was very sarcastic. I was a smart mouth. And, you know, being bullied and abused can make you very sarcastic and smart mouth because it's how you survive. You survive on sarcasm and being a smart aleck. Does anyone else want to add anything to this?
Sorry, it's Penelope. I'm just wondering if gaslighting is a cousin to bullying, because a lot of that to me sounds like gaslighting or something similar to it.
Oh, gaslighting and bullying go hand in hand. Gaslighting, remember that bullying and abuse are one and the same because there's an imbalance of power. But, people talk about bullying and abuse as if they are separate entities, and they really aren't. So there's gaslighting in both instances. Now, bullies will gaslight you to make you feel crazy. Anytime you defend yourself against a bully or go report the bully to anyone in authority, the bullies are going to gaslight you. Because they're not going to admit they're wrong. Bullies always have a desire to be right 100% of the time. Not only that, they don't like being exposed. And when you report them or you defend yourself against them, then you are basically taking your power back and exposing them for the weak cowards they are.
So is it common practice for a bully when it's intended, victim does, defend him or herself? is it not uncommon for that bully then to accuse the defender of bullying as a tactic?
Okay, repeat that.
So I'm just curious if bullies, if a tactic is, you know, when its intended subject, the person who is being bullied, does get to the point of wanting to defend themselves against the behavior, if bullies tend to, as a pattern, turn the tables and tell the victim that they are the bully.
Oh, absolutely. Bullies accuse the target of being bullies all the time. It's how they fake victimhood. There's an acronym called DARVO, D-A-R-V-O, DARVO. And what DARVO stands for is deny, attack, reverse victim and offender. And what that means is the bully will deny their behavior, then they will attack you, and then they will reverse victim and offender. In other words, they'll accuse you of being the bully, and they'll try to play the role of the victim to get sympathy from others and to make you look like the monster that you aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a lot of targets get a bad name, because the bullies will abuse them, and then when the target asserts their right not to be bullied, then the bullies make the target look like the victim to everyone else. And they do this through smear campaigns, rumors, gossip. And they have to tell everybody else that they're the victim when they aren't. They are the oppressor. But, you know, there are ways that you can defend against this. And the number one way is to listen to your gut. If that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach sounds off, and you feel that something is off about these bullies, don't ignore it. If your gut feeling tells you that you're being abused, then you're being abused. And you should speak out about it. Also, observe any surrounding bystanders. Make a split-second micro glance of the witnesses and note their reactions and what they're looking at. Notice their facial expressions and gestures. If you see any of these expressions that I'm about to check off, and you're likely to notice many of them together, then you are the target of the insult of a passive aggressive bully.
Mm-hmm.
If the bystanders alternate uncomfortable glances from the bully to you and then back to the bully, you know that the stealthy insults are pointed toward you. If you hear light gasps or grunts of shock from the audience, then you've been insulted. If you see their whole faces change suddenly and mouth slightly gape open, if you hear soft but derisive giggles, chuckles, or laughter, if you see and hear snickering, any number of these will give you a yes, and that you can address the problem accordingly. But we also have bullies with social capital. What that means is bullies who are popular. They're the most destructive because they can use their popularity as a shield from accountability. These are bullies with the most social connections and friends in high places. The bullies well thought of or well feared by a vast majority of your school or workplace or neighborhood. They can be the cool kids at school or the good old boy clique at work or in town. These bullies can also be adults, well-thought-of school officials and local politicians, or kids who are members of a certain well-known families in a particular area. Although money does help, these people don't necessarily have to be rich to have these connections. You know, I've known people who were quite poor who had these types of relationships as well. And what gives them the power they have is their connections with the right people, which is why bullies in these select groups are especially dangerous and can do the most damage to a target. Because the connections that they have can back them up. And if they're powerful connections, what are you going to do?
Thank you, Sheree. I'm going to take this moment to repeat our phone number, if you don't mind. Everyone out in the audience listening, you're welcome to call in and become part of our discussion of bullying. That phone number is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. And Penelope will answer the phone and welcome you into the show. Okay, back to you, Sheree.
Okay, are you there?
I have a question, Sheree.
Sure.
My question is this. You're so knowledgeable about bullying. How did you learn all of this? How did you become an expert on bullies?
Well, several ways. Well, the first way is that I experienced it, and experience is the best teacher. I experienced it for 6 long years, and I even experienced it, you know, for a time when I was in my early 40s at a workplace. Of course, I didn't work there very long. I was able to get out. And I was able to get evidence. I was able to keep a CYA file to cover my butt with.
What's a CYA file?
Well, it's cover your file.
Oh.
Words I can't say on the phone. But it's cover your blank file.
Uh-huh, okay.
But I was able to keep a CYA file, and how I did that at work was I took pictures of all of my finished work, and, you know, when you take pictures with your phone, you know, there's an automatic time stamp on it. So,
yes.
I mean, I kept evidence. I documented the bullying I suffered. I even went to work with a digital recorder several times. So, you know, I had plenty of evidence against these people. Thankfully, I never had to use it, but I kept it in a hidden location at my house just in case I needed it. Luckily, I didn't need it because, you know, they didn't fire me. A lot of targets get unjustly fired when they're bullied at work. I didn't. I saw the signs. I gathered the evidence. And in the end, I was able to leave on my own terms and move on to a better workplace.
That's kind of a shame that you had to do that, though.
Oh, well, sure, it is a shame, but, you know, I think everybody is going to be bullied at work at one time, you know, one time during their work lives. I think everybody experiences. And that's why it's so important to know what to do when you're being bullied at work. Luckily, I only worked at this place 2.5 years. And the first year at this workplace was actually very good. I got along with everybody, you know, just as I had in all my other jobs. You know, I did not get bullied at work. You know, once I left school, I never got bullied at work until during this instance. And I was already in my 40s. So I'd been in the workplace, gosh, over 20 years. But because I had already been bullied in school, I knew what to do. And so, yeah, that saved me. But it's a sad reality that anytime you're bullied at work, you cannot depend on anyone else but you. That means you have to gather your own evidence. You have to do your own investigation. Now, you know, your workplace will tell you that they will investigate the problem. No, they won't, because at the end of the day, anybody who tells you that, they're for the workplace. They are not for you. They are not your friends. Mm-hmm. Their job is to protect the reputation of the company.
You know, I went to my supervisors about a bully one time. She was placed with me after having bullied other people. And they said, oh, everyone gets along with Annie because I'm kind of easygoing. Well, she bullied me awfully. And I went to the principal, and he called a meeting with the, you know, the counselors and this and that. And I gave my story, and they were all appalled. Nothing was done. Nothing was done. They just listened and ignored it.
Right. I'm so sorry to hear that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised at all, because that's usually what happens.
Yeah. And I think maybe I am a good bully target, because I was bullied by two different people at work at two different times. And I think part of it is just because I don't fight back. When my mother used to scream at me, you know, she taught me, you don't say anything, you don't fight back, you just stand there and take it, or else it's going to get worse, you know. And I think that's why. I think maybe those people wouldn't have bullied another teacher, but maybe it's something in me that brought it out. What do you think?
Wow. That, you know, anytime you're being bullied in your own family, that... you know, I was lucky to grow up in a good family, a nurturing family, but I've heard of other people who are bullied in their families, and I can only imagine that is the most heartbreaking of any other type of bullying, because when it's someone you love and someone you look up to, it can be especially damaging because you trust this person. And when this person hurts you, it just does all kinds of psychological damage. You know, my heart goes out to anyone who is bullied by a family member, because you feel a certain obligation to them, and they use that. You know, my heart goes out to you, honey.
Well, you're very kind.
But there's
Thank
another
you.
Thing that I – oh, you're very welcome, honey. But there was another thing I failed to mention a while ago. I kind of got off track. Not only how I'd become such an expert in bullying, not only did I experience it for 6 long years, but I researched it. I've been researching bullying, reading about it, everything I can get my hands on for the last 25-plus years.
Oh, so, you are an expert. My goodness.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. But it's always something that has interested me. And so I've been reading about it since I was about 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a long time, once I got out of school, there were a lot of unanswered questions. And I finally got those questions answered at work one night when I found a magazine that had an article in it about a boy who was bullied by everyone in his school. He had to leave. And when I read the story, all of a sudden, it's just like all of my questions got answered. And basically, it was a boy named Chris, and this was back in 1995, 1996 when I found this article. It was about a boy named Chris that was bullied by his classmates. And, you know, they would provoke him to fight, and a lot of times he wouldn't, and he would just get beat up so bad. But when he, like me, he got tired of it and he started fighting back. And he would be the one to get in trouble in school. And this went on for years. Well, finally, you know, his parents figured it out, and they quoted in the article that it was like each of these kids were trying to protect one another. It was the whole school against this boy. And they eventually had to move him to a new school. And once they moved him to a new school, he made all kinds of friends at his new school. You know, he started getting invitations to go out, to getting phone calls from his new classmates. I mean, they were just enamored by this boy. And so transferring him to a new school was the best thing these parents could have done. And just the same, I transferred schools in high school. And that was the best decision I ever made, because when I transferred to the new school, I too had all of these friends, and they seemed to look out for me. I was invited to clubs, the senior picnic committee, this committee, that committee, and it really helped in my healing.
It sounds like a good way to get away from a bully is to move yourself, but sometimes that's not possible, and sometimes you can't
Absolutely.
Move the bully either.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to get up and leave, because you know, there are places that are toxic that have a culture of bullying.
Yeah, my house when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear
so
that.
Many things to, oh, that's okay. Long time ago. Thank you, though. Yeah. Yeah. I don't usually think about being bullied, because I think of myself as a survivor of sexual assault as a child, and I don't think about the bullying part, but that was the constant. That was the daily constant thing, and I'm sure that it was very harmful to my psyche. I know that I had a breakdown in the fifth grade. I had a nervous breakdown, they called it back then, and I couldn't go to school. So it was very destructive, and I still struggle with depression and obsessiveness, that kind of thing, which I believe are symptoms of having been abused and bullied as a child.
Right. And I can understand that. You know, that's your inner child still trying to heal.
Yeah. Penelope, would you like to join the conversation?
Oh, sure. I would love to. And I'm just sitting in here and, you know, nodding my head and a couple things. In fact, what Annie, you said is, you know, was I somehow, you know, was I, I've been through, you know, many different situations and venues where I've been, you know, the victim of bullying, and did I have a target on my back? And, I feel like, you know, I could ask the same question. I think that when you are, you know, born in a home of abuse and child abuse, and we learn about what we accept as just being a normal type of treatment, and even though it's anything but, I think, you know, if a bully is a coward looking for a target, you know, we stand out, you know, whether we realize it or not, because this is a behavior that we've, you know, learned. And in some respects, we don't accept it, but we just don't, or we accept it when maybe others, you know, would push back maybe earlier and more often. So I noticed, you know, I was kind of nodding my head, and I do think the bullying within the family is almost overlooked, you know, especially when you, the other forms of maltreatment maybe were more prevalent, or maybe they just, the volume was turned up more, the bullying almost seemed to be secondary or something that wasn't, you know, if you think about it, is almost like an afterthought. And I was sort of nodding my head there too. And it almost sets a precedent. So I know in my family, not only the parents bully the children, but the children were encouraged to bully each other. I mean, bullying was just almost, was very commonplace in my family. It was, and no one even really could recognize that behavior because it was our normal. And then I too was also later on in my career, 5 years ago, so towards the end of my second longest long career, I've had three. I was in a situation, I'd been the company almost 10 years, and I had been a very, very top performer. I was in a sales position, and I was under the direction of a tyrannical boss, huge bully, and he was just going through mainly, unfortunately, female employees, direct reports, and he was bullying them out of their job, really just tyrannical. And he just started picking off the women that he inherited to manage on his team one by one. And finally he came to me. And I actually, Cherie and Annie, I ran. I'd been at the company 11 years, and I just thought, I just don't want to be the next one. I don't want to go through what I've seen, and I'm leaving. And I did leave. I guess maybe that was the right decision. I was questioning that for a couple years. So anyway, those are just my comments. And I, you know, I was shaking my head, and I do appreciate really, Cherie, just that, you know, the education on so many different aspects of bullying, because, you know, I can see now how they've been interwoven, you know, throughout my life. And I like noticing patterns because it gives me an opportunity to recognize them. Whether I'm, you know, in one, or even, as Annie, I think, bravely mentioned, participating in one, you know, that awareness is helpful as, you know, we continue in recovery as adult survivors of child abuse. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And I'm so sorry you went through that. Just
thank
know
you.
That none of it was your fault, and there was nothing wrong with you. The people who abused you and bullied you, they had the issues. And I just wanted to let you know that.
Well, and thank you for saying that, because that's the first time that's been validated by anyone. So thank you. You know, we don't get that kind of validation, especially if we're still surrounded by those types of people. So thank you for saying that. It means a lot.
You're very welcome. Well, you know, people who are abused like you were and like Annie was, y'all need to hear that they need to hear that there was nothing wrong with them, that they did not do anything to attract that kind of behavior from anyone. You know, they didn't. It was the people that did the abuse, because if your abusers didn't have those issues, a lot of mental issues, then they would never have felt the need to bully. But because they felt the need to bully you, then they're the ones that have the issue. Anybody that has to treat another human being so horribly obviously has mental issues.
Yes, absolutely. And I think though, it's sometimes in the workplace, sometimes it's harder, I feel, to discern, especially if it's someone who's in a position of authority, you know, to know where that line is.
Absolutely.
Because like you said, it can be a stealth bomber, which I love that terminology. It's like, yeah, I've had some stealth bombs come my way. Because sometimes there is a gray, you know, it is gray. And I think that sometimes those bullies can definitely leverage that.
Right. They abuse their power, their authority. That's
mm-hmm.
why a lot of bullies are in authoritarian positions. And they abuse that power, you know, instead of leaders, instead of examples, they become tyrants because they get off on that power, the power to tell you what to do, to order you around, to yell at you, to curse at you. They get off on that power. And anybody, it really goes to show how sick they are.
Yeah. You know, my supervisor who was bullying his direct reports, he would actually literally break company rules. Like he was having his employees expense really expensive dinners that he would, you know, have his team participate in, and he would really rack up the bill, and then he would bully one of his direct reports and do expensing it on their corporate card so that he could approve it. He wasn't allowed to take employees out to these dinners, and per protocol, it's always the highest ranking person at the table that pays the bill, because, you know, obviously he should not be approving a bill that he racked up. It should be going to his supervisor. So he had already been investigated for this kind of conduct within this team, kept doing it, but would fire, he would target and then fire anyone that had knowledge of it, that reported to him. So he was a very, very sick person.
Oh, my goodness. I am so sorry.
Yes. So I just want to throw that out there because that was so many different layers, I think, of just deceptiveness and bullying and psychological issues. Didn't think the rules applied to him, plus abusive power.
Right. Madge, I wanted to talk a little bit about the more obvious bullies, and that is the physically violent type. You know, it's said that the weakest person always uses physical violence, but the strongest person always uses their brain. It's also true that the weakest person talks the most and the loudest, but the strongest person gets his message across in few words. Now, through experience, I found that bullies were taught at home that violence is the answer to all of their problems. And, you know, maybe they may have been taught, you know, through experiencing physical violence at home that this is the way, what they have to do to get what they want. Most of my classmates had the same brutish mentality. If you didn't give them what they wanted, they resorted to using their fists to teach you a lesson and to force you to comply. They also used physical violence anytime they felt they weren't getting the respect, and I say that with air quotes here, respect, they thought that they were entitled to. And I did a lot of research on that as well. And what I found is that these kinds of bullies may use physical violence to take their frustrations out on whoever, on, you know, the target whenever they've had a bad day or when they're in a bad mood. It's pathetic, really. Their knee-jerk reactions are triggered with self-demeaning or self-defeating thought and a feeling of indignation somewhere between the target's perceived statement or action and the bully's blow-up. Anytime these types of bullies attack you physically, there's always that self-defeating thought that flashes through their mind a split second before they attack you. And, you know, these thoughts are, oh, well, he thinks I'm a wuss. She thinks I'm a loser. He thinks I'm chicken. She thinks I'm weak. He thinks I'm stupid. She thinks my opinions don't matter. I'm not getting through to this jerk. He doesn't respect me. She won't validate me. Like I said, all of these are split-second thoughts that flash through their minds before they throw the first punch to hit you. And this only boils down to this, that if you don't agree with them, then you don't respect me. You don't respect them. Or if you don't give them what they want, then they don't think you take them seriously. The bully also has an afterthought that compels them to physically attack the target. And the afterthought may be something like, I need to show this person that they can't insult me and get away with it. And I need to do it so they'll know that I'm not a pushover or a punk. Or it could be this, I need to show this person she cannot ignore me and just walk away. This is a physical abuser. Okay. Physically violent bullies think that being calm and cool and maintaining one's temper is a sign of weakness, or that walking away from a confrontation and ignoring an aggressor is a sign of disrespect. We got to understand that these bullies place high value on their status and social image. Here, let me see. You know, the physically violent bullies believe that the target wronged them somehow, that the target should be punished and destroyed. We need to realize that when you're a target of bullies who are physically violent, they will impose rules of conduct and engagement on you that they themselves don't follow and think that they're exempt from. And they truly believe that you must respect them at all times. You must be fully aware of what they want and expect from them. You must do what they tell you to do. You must never say no to them. You must only say what the bullies want to hear. You must be available and at their beck and call anytime they want. You should satisfy their every whim. You should put them first and sacrifice your wants, needs, and even yourself for them. Physically violent bullies will constantly apply evil intentions to you and feel consistent urges to make you pay for supposedly being such a pain. But we got to remember that these bullies are under the delusion that you are persecuting them when, in fact, it's the exact opposite. This blaming you helps them to soothe their own self-image.
You know, Cherie, as I was listening to you, it came to my mind about when at college, when they do fraternity rushes and they put their pledges through all kinds of terrible experiences. It sounds just like what you're saying. The pledges aren't allowed to say no to them. They have to do whatever they're told. It just sounds like that whole setup is a bullying setup with victims in it.
Absolutely, it is. And I'll tell you something else. They call that hazing. And people have died from that.
Yeah. They call it hazing.
Hazing.
And, yeah, hazing. Basically, they initiate you into a sorority or a fraternity. It's called initiation.
Oh, yeah,
and
I've heard that, yeah.
It's wrong, but it's a part of this sorority fraternity culture.
Yes.
And it makes me glad that I was never a part of any sorority. But
yeah, I don't think that
would
have been.
But, you know, many of my classmates were in these, many of my bullies were in these high school fraternities and sororities, and they had to do really stupid and demeaning, self-demeaning things to get into that sorority.
Yeah.
And the way I looked at it, if I have to demean myself to get into some stupid club, no thanks, I'll pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what the attraction is to be willing to go through. And even I know there's physical. You know, they hit you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, gang initiation, you know. A lot of these gang initiations, people want to join gangs. And, you know, from what I have heard, they're either, you know, beat in or sexed in. And, you know, again, if you have to go through all that degradation and, you know, physical beatings and that self-depreciation just to join a club, then it's not worth it. It just isn't.
No. And what's it setting you up for in life? It's setting you up for being a victim of a bully. It's practice.
Absolutely. And exactly. And another thing is, you know, you guys were talking about being abused at home. Many targets are abused at home. Of course, many bullies are too. So, you know, it can be six of one, half a dozen. But what I've noticed is when if there's a target of bullying and he's been abused at home, chances are the abuse that he suffered at home conditioned him to take more abuse. So by the time he gets in school, he's already had that conditioning. So he just takes the bullying from the other kids because he thinks it's normal. What do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I think so. Penelope, would you like to weigh in?
Well, I agree that's true, and I also feel that, you know, having, you know, been growing up in an abusive home, I always wanted acceptance and belonging, and so I was, you know, even in friendships and, you know, even with those that now I believe bullied me, I think bullies are more susceptible because you want to be accepted and you want to be liked, and you want people to, you know, not turn away from you. I think you're willing to do things. I was willing to do things just to be accepted. And that at times meant, you know, putting up with behavior that I knew was hurtful, but I just didn't think that there was any other way. So I agree with that.
Mhm.
Yep. You know, all of, you know, the abuse at home just softens you up to take more abuse, and it's a shame. And it's a hard cycle to break. Basically, when you become of age and leave the home, you know, when you grew up being abused, you have to pretty much vomit up all that vile crap that you've been fed over the years. And that takes years.
takes a lifetime, I think.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times it does. It takes an entire lifetime. I mean, abuse, you're just never the same afterwards. You're not that confident, pure-hearted child you once were, because abuse takes that out of you. Bullying and abuse takes it out of you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we have about 15 minutes left of our show. And so I was just thinking maybe we could talk about healing. What kind of techniques are there for healing when you have been an abused child? Or, I mean, a bullied one. Or not even a child, a bullied person.
I think the best thing to heal, the best way to heal is to write down what you feel every day. Not only that, well, for starters, you need to get out of that environment, because you're not going to even begin to heal until you get out of that abusive environment. And once you're out of the environment, that's when the healing can begin. And what helped me was to read about what I'd went through, you know, do a lot of research, a lot of reading, find out why people feel the need to abuse others. And once you start reading and researching, those questions are going to be answered, and that in itself is going to provide healing. You need to know that the abusers have the issues that you do not. You did not have the issues. The abusers had the issue. Otherwise, they wouldn't have felt the need to abuse you. And so, you know, once somebody tells you that, then you can really heal.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start putting the pieces together.
What about support groups? Are there support groups for survivors of bullying?
Oh, well, I don't know of any support groups around my area. I don't know any physical support groups. I do know of some support groups that are on social media. However, I think that physical support groups would be a better thing. I mean, I'm not saying that social media groups don't help a little bit, but physical support groups are better, because you are physically around other people who have been through what you've been through, and you get to talk to them. You get to see their body language, their facial expressions. You know, nothing beats face-to-face. You know, social media is good, but it doesn't beat face-to-face contact.
Mm-hmm.
It's nowhere near as good as that personal, you know, real world contact.
What about counseling? Are there counselors who are trained in dealing with bullying victims? Is it like a specialty the way trauma is now?
Yes. Most counselors these days are trained, you know, to work with patients who have been bullied, kids who have been bullied. I think that's part of the curriculum now. And most counselors and therapists are trained through bullying. Of course, like I said, counselors have been dealing with patients who have been abused for decades. But I don't think people really made the connection between abuse and bullying and realized that they're really one and the same. Until just recently. So,
So therapists know, they know how to help.
Yes.
How about a book to read for recovery? Can you recommend? I know you have 3 books. Let's recommend those first. Will you tell us about your books?
I sure can. My first book is From Victim to Victor. And what it is, it's a chronological account of the 6 years that I was bullied in school. And my second book, my other 3 books are fictions. And my second book is entitled Townies, Cronies, and Hayseed. And it's a fiction about a widowed mother of 4 who had been bullied in school. She had moved away, and years later her grandmother dies in the town that she was bullied in, so she's got to return to settle her estate. And while she's there, she finds out that the kids who bullied her in school are now run this town. They start bullying her again, picking up where they left off. The second book is called From The Vow of Chastity Baker, and this is a fiction about someone who started out as a teenage prostitute, and once she's arrested, she decides that she's going to change her life, go back to school, get a degree, and try to lead a normal life. However, there are people who remember her past, and they set roadblocks for her, and they bully her because of her past as being a prostitute. The fourth book is entitled Kids Under the Latch Key, and this book is about a group of kids who take this befriend this mentally disadvantaged man, and this man is bullied in the town, so they take him under their wing and become his protectors. And it's a first person narrative. Basically it's Grace, the 16-year-old girl that is talking in the book and telling us the story about this mentally disadvantaged man and how they tried to protect him.
And where can people buy your books?
Okay, I didn't quite understand that.
I'm sorry. Where can the audience buy your books?
Oh, okay. They can find them all on Amazon. It's also on BarnesandNoble.com. It's on a lot of online storefronts, but I would recommend going to Amazon.
Okay. And everybody, her name is Cherie White. That's Cherie White. So probably if you put that in Amazon, all of her books will come up. All right, we have a few more minutes. Is there anything else that you'd like to cover? We have about 8.
Okay. I remember you asked me. You asked me what books I had read, and
yes.
that I would recommend from other authors. The first book I would like to recommend is What Will People Think by Roma Sharma. And it's a book about how to be confident in yourself and stop worrying about what other people think. Another book I'd like to recommend is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now, that book changed my life. Yes, I love Dale Carnegie. I read that, the first time I read that book was when I was in high school, right before I transferred. And then the second time, I reread it again a second time about 20 years later. But it is a great book. And, you know, it will show you how to, you know, further connect with people. Because one thing I've noticed about people who have been targeted for bullying, they become shy. They become withdrawn from people, which is normal after you've been bullied and abused because you just don't trust people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that book really got me out of my shy period.
Okay. I'll have to read that one. I saw it on Kindle, and I thought, oh, maybe I should read. I will. Now that you recommend it, I will definitely read that one. So we've got What Will People Think and How to Win Friends and Influence People. Any others?
Oh, let me. I also Bullied Out of Existence. I'm trying to find the book here. Or Mobbed Out of Existence. Pardon me. I'm trying to find the book so that I can figure out who the author is. Can't seem to find it, but the book is called Mobbed Out of Existence. It's by Mary something, somebody. I think if they typed it into the Amazon search bar, then they will find it. I'm almost sure of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Mobbed Out of Existence. Here's a few more books I want to recommend. One is The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene, The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene, and the 32 Strategies of War by Robert Greene. The 32 Strategies of War, it's all about bullying. Although he doesn't mention bullying in the book, he does mention targets. And basically, that'll give you the lowdown about bullies and their tactics.
Okay. Great. We should put these book names up on the NASCAR website for people so that they'll have an idea of what they could read. I think in the resources there is a book list. I'll mention it to Bill because I wrote them down.
Oh, okay. You wanted to know my website?
Yes, please.
Well, I have a blog. You can get there at the link, www.shereewhite.wordpress.com. Then I have an author website, www.authorshereewhite.com. And those are my websites.
Okay, great. And people, if they want to get in touch with you, there's probably something there to email you or something.
They can get in touch with me through my regular email for right now.
Okay. And you want to give that?
I've got. Yeah. It's ShereeWhite69@gmail.com. But right now, I'm my website. We're in the process of changing it, so we're gonna have it. My author website. We're gonna have it once we get done making some changes to it. Then people will be able to contact me through my author website.
Okay, good. Websites always happen to be updated, aren't they?
Yes. Absolutely.
And are you working on a new book now?
Yeah, I'm working on two new books. In fact, they are They're sequels. One of the books is Townies, Cronies, and Hayseeds 2, which is a sequel to the first Townies, Cronies, and Hayseeds. And then the second book is The Second Vow of Chastity Baker, which is a sequel to my third book. So that should be out. Those books should possibly be out next year.
That's wonderful. You must be very prolific. There we go. To have written so many books and now two more. That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, writing is my passion.
Is it? Yeah. And you recommend that people write every day so that they can get in touch with their own stories of being bullied.
That's right. Because if you can't, sometimes when you're a target of bullying and abuse, you have nobody to talk to. So the only outlet is to write about it.
Yes.
Instead of pouring your heart out to another person, you're pouring your heart out on paper.
And you can see things. I know when I write on paper with, you know, by hand, things come up that would not have occurred to me. You know, it just that wouldn't have crossed my mind. But then it comes up and there it is right in writing. Oh, wow, look at that.
Oh, that happens when you write. That does. But that's why writing is so therapeutic, because a lot of things that you buried and wouldn't otherwise remember, they come out and you can put it down on paper.
I found it so healing to write about my story that before I wrote it, I had a hard time talking about it at all. But once I had written it out, it was like, whoa, I didn't do anything wrong. That was his crime and his shame.
Right.
Had nothing to do with me. I just got
Absolutely.
The 90-second notice. And so I'm going to wrap it up. And Penelope, thank you for being here tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a wonderful time. I learned so much, but I always do from you, Cherie. Thank you.
Great.
You're so welcome, Penelope. And it was, you're so welcome, Annie, Penelope. It was so good talking to you today.
All right. Well, good night, everybody. This has been Stop Child Abuse Now, Scan, radio show number 3012. And all of our shows are archived on the website so that you can go back in time and listen to any show that you want. My name is Annie Margis. I've been one of your co-hosts tonight, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Good night.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was good.